right, everybody, welcome to Coffee Break. I'm Neil Damgard. I'm here with Ray Connolly, who is a Massachusetts resident. Welcome, Ray.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And we are both here in Dallas, Texas this week at the International Cultic Studies Association, ICSA, conference. And I've attended one other one. You probably attended a number of these conferences.
This is my third.
This is your third one. And Ray is married. His wife is Stephanie. She's in Brazil.
Having a blast.
Grandchild getting married?
Yeah. Okay. Married now.
Yeah. And you have how many children, Ray?
We have 11 children.
11 children.
And 12 grandkids.
And 12 grandkids. So you can't make any more children to catch up with the grandkids now, probably, right?
Well, it's highly unlikely.
Okay. So I met Ray a couple of years ago, and he and I serve on the board together of Meadowhaven and the New England Institute of Religious Research, and that's how we met. Ray has a very interesting background. Originally, you're from where?
New Jersey.
New Jersey, and you came to Massachusetts?
I left New Jersey when I was 19 and started hitchhiking around searching for the truth. Ended up in California and crossed paths with an radical offshoot of the Jesus movement.
And what was the group that?
Well, at the time it was called the Children of God. It's changed names a few times since then, but and
that would have been about what year?
1970.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Kent State had just happened.
Yeah.
1907 figure looms large in my awareness too. And did you meet Stephanie in that time?
Yeah, we were both. I was hitchhiking on my way to Berkeley to. My brother had an experience with Jesus, but didn't know how to convey. He just knew that I had to accept Christ. But I had no idea how to do that, never heard the word before, nor did he. He just knew that was something. He happened to be on LSD at the time, so he said, I don't think that's part of it, but, you know, I really can't explain it to you very well. So
he was in a different world at that time, a different strata.
So his theology was thin, shall we say.
But you met up with the Children of God, as it was called then,
and got involved. Yeah, she was hitchhiking through on her way to Big Sur. We both stopped in Santa Barbara to go to a political rally, a Jerry Rubin Chicago 7 radical politics of the day.
Yeah.
And we met the group, and they were doing a demonstration there predicting the downfall of America.
How do you do a demo of that?
Sackcloth and ashes. A coffin draped with the American flag.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they invited you to join them? Is that what it was?
Yeah. You know, just come on down and see the commune after a rather dramatic experience with the Lord, you know, conversion experience, sinner's prayer. But it was quite moving and very impactful, so went along.
And they had a place, an establishment there in Southern California?
Yeah, in L.A. We rode the bus, you know, the prophet bus or whatever it was called at the day. We went back down to L.A. to a converted mission that was had about 100.
How many people in the group?
About 100.
Okay, yeah. And there was an appeal, obviously.
Obviously, yeah.
So you're in that group how long, you and Stephanie?
21 years. Yeah, almost just shy of 21 years.
And let's take a moment here. You've written your story about this in a book, right?
Yeah, it's called Something Somebody Stole, and it is available on Amazon.
Okay.
Ray Connolly. Connolly, C-O-N-N-O-L-L-Y.
Okay, Something Somebody Stole.
Yeah.
And so 21...
And it's cheap.
And it's cheap. Yeah, go get it, folks. Check it out. And you were in at 21, so that's 1970 until...
In 1991, yeah.
And you and Stephanie have 11 children along the way.
Right.
And you, so, you know, you and I have met up by chance, not by chance, but by providence, however we want to interpret it, through this group that we're both very supportive of and appreciative of. And, you know, at this conference, I'm overwhelmed with... Is it possible to be overwhelmed with being fascinated with stuff? I don't know. I'm endlessly fascinated in the idea of we are traveling among, for these 3 days, people from so many interesting backgrounds.
Yeah,
and sad. I'd say most of them, there's a sad aspect.
Yeah. I'd say by the time you get to one of these, though, you have done some processing. And most people, like a lot of the therapists and so on that are here,
yeah,
went into the field primarily to begin to understand their own experience, and then got into the caring nature of helping others, yeah, going through the same sort of traumatic
event.
So can
you say something about, I mean, I really am not that familiar with the Children of God or whatever they're currently, they still exist?
It's more or less a blog now. They don't have communes anymore. There's no strict rules. People just...
No head person or anything.
They're still a head person, but their teaching is dialed way back, and they're close to mainstream Christianity on all but a few things. And there's no real control anymore.
Oh, interesting. And it was a high-control group, obviously.
It's very high. High demand.
It was damaging.
Very damaging.
Yes. So can you say something about what the circumstances were that led you and Stephanie to back away first and then to leave? Because that was a process, I'm sure.
Well, for me, it was more of a process while I was in the group. I began to have... We were gone through a lot of things. I'd been gotten pretty close to the top leadership from time to time, and it sowed eventually some serious doubt in my mind concerning what we were involved with. But by that time, you're very invested. I not only was married to Stephanie and had a large family with her, but I had a second wife with six kids, and you're pretty invested. You can't really visualize any way to
easily,
you know, change careers, shall we say. It's not...
go get a different master's.
Yeah,
shift tracks. Right.
Or, you know, sign up at the local First Baptist. Probably not, you know.
Probably
so we had to... I kept it all to myself because I knew that if I did start telling my wife how I was feeling, she would, out of concern for me, share it with someone else, and our life would come unraveled rather rapidly.
Right.
But eventually it hit, you know, the yogurt hit the fan, and someone asked me the wrong question at the wrong time, and I just kind of blew up, and that was the beginning of the end for me. Stephanie had a choice.
Which was about how long, I'm just curious, how long a period of time from the beginning of doubts till you made a break?
Probably 2 years.
Yeah.
It was I spent a lot of late nights and early mornings reading the Bible, trying to prove to myself that we were really wrong. I couldn't justify just walking away from, if God had called me to something, I couldn't walk away with it without knowing for sure that God was telling me
so
to go.
As I've known you, Ray, you seem to still, you have a great desire to interpret your own experience and now still in light of the Lord.
Absolutely.
And how he's working and how he providentially allowed you to undergo to withstand, maybe I should say, the trauma of being in a high control group and then the trauma of leaving.
Yeah.
You somehow or other survived that.
Well, you know, I'm less driven to try and get God to explain the details of his plan than I once was. And I'm more comfortable with the ambiguities of my life, but try to approach it as there's wisdom to be gleaned. And if I can learn from that, perhaps there's something to offer others and at least my own family.
So back to, if I can ask you a detailed question, back to 1970 and Los Angeles and the commune, did they do worship services? Did they do worship?
Oh, yeah.
And that was that, you know, like? What was that about?
Well, it was kind of, you know, Jesus movement stuff, and a lot of drums, and, you know, harmonicas, and the whole works, and, you know, dancing in circles.
We don't have harmonicas in our church yet, but that's something we could explore.
My wife plays the harmonica.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
But anyway, it was... So, and it was, you know, very high energy. We were all smiling and, you know, hugging each other, and barely touching the ground by the end of one of our worships, but we didn't call it worship, we called it, I was trying to think today, it's not happy hour, but something like that.
Get happy hour. Interesting. And was it all young people?
Pretty much. There was an occasional burnout pastor who'd wander in, get fascinated, but mostly, it was mostly, you know, college kids, dopers, bikers.
Yeah. Very 60s.
Yeah.
And so how did you end up coming east.
Well,
from New Jersey,
yeah.
California.
So we spent a couple of years in the States bouncing around just to different counterculture centers and sharing the gospel in Atlanta and D.C.
Taking your kids with you, obviously.
Well, having our kids, you know, our first one was born in Virginia and then the next one in D.C. And then we went to India. We went out to India to work in the counterculture. There's a bunch of hippies back there in their early 70s and did the same kind of work on the beaches, had a clinic. Kids got really sick and really flipped out and did a lot of work with, you know, kids traumatized. Yeah, exactly.
Like.
A lot like
wavy
that.
Wavy gravy. Yeah.
With the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Wavy Bible gravy.
And as time went on, you know, we were, obviously it was from the very beginning, there was a little bit of iron mixed with clay. It wasn't all pure, it wasn't all evil, but there was good and bad. And, mm-hmm. As time went on, we morphed more and more into the strange, peculiar, as the founder of our group got stranger and stranger and less tied to reality. And it became very damaging to our lives. If you read the book, it's full of sex and violence.
Yeah, with a Bible.
Where else?
So at this point, would your perspective be, and this sounds like a loaded question, it sounds like the sort of thing I would ask, but I sincerely am interested. How did, was their interpretation of Scripture, how they handled Bible interpretation, was it sort of just top-down, handed by the guy down, and this is what this means, and that's all there is to it, or was there dialogue?
No, it was top-down. And it was, you know, when it came to soteriology, Christology, pretty mainstream, pretty sound. Okay. We were charismatic, but not wildly so. But when it got into areas of his particular interest, a lot to do with communication with people that have passed away, spirit beings, and so on, and then the sexual thing that was a big part of his psyche, and that really took our group in a very different direction, alienated us from the rest of Christian culture permanently. So
by the mid-70s, people are starting to pay attention, thinkers are starting to pay attention to groups
probably,
like that.
Yeah. Mid-70s, then the late 70s, it really got very bizarre, and we were, you know, our few friends left in the civilized world, you know, the ties.
Yeah.
But,
So, you know, I really appreciate your sitting down with me and sharing some, just I know it doesn't do justice it's to, you know, decades of an experience.
Yeah.
What would you say, so high control was a feature, you've mentioned some other things. That just seemed off track in time to you, and damaged the reputation of the group. What would you say something was good about the group that you?
Well, I think you know if you try to live communally on a very low budget and base your life on the principles of the early Christian commune concept, you're going to learn something. You know, you're going to have to learn to love one another and share
put
and
up with one another.
Put up exactly and. There's a lot you learn in that type of situation. Unfortunately, it's not a sustainable vision for people to live. Once you start having families, you cannot do it because then the way you raise your family, discipline your children, teach your children, all that comes from one source. You don't have the ability to read your children's individual personalities. It's all very dogmatic. And that's destructive. You can't do it.
Interesting, and I'm sure many other communal groups have found that as they've
Absolutely.
Grown from being 21, turn around and they're 31 and they got two kids. And it gets complicated. You have to live together. So, were you still with the group when they had a name change?
Yeah, first we just—I don't even exactly—we did start getting bad publicity in the name Children of God. And we started calling ourselves it was just a gradual thing. The family was always sort of a nickname. Then it became the name of the group. And then they officially said, we're not the Children of God as a way to try to cut ties with some of the baggage that we'd collected. And took on the name. After I left, they took on the name The Family International as kind of an official name. But other than that, the family was always what we went by, and we tried not to be official in any way, so, you know, you couldn't be prosecuted or sued or, you know, et cetera.
You know, it's funny, I've got to ask you a really silly question, but when I first became a Christian, which was in 72, And I worked on campus. I was on campus, college campus, and it was all very groovy. And I mean that. Groovy is a technical term for fabulous and wonderful. And we had lots of songs that we sang, and one of them, we were told that's a Children of God song. And it was, you got to be a baby.
Oh, yeah, that was...
You know that song.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When I lived in India, the Catholic church next door, Sunday morning, we would hear them singing our song.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That was recorded in France and Brazil. It was recorded,
is that right?
You know, they were,
so
you know,
so
sold
you
a lot of records.
That, yeah. That, well, we just heard it was a rumor, but I always wondered if it was true or not. Yeah. And I loved that song, by the way.
You could, sometimes we would be cross paths with other people traveling, and I remember in Istanbul, which is a Muslim country. You don't go around saying, hey, are you in the Children of God to people? Because if they're secret police, you're in trouble.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
But one of the ways you would find out if there was another child of God in the vicinity was whistle, you got to be a baby.
Oh, it's an identifier, a code song.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Well, anything else that, you know, so now you live in
Massachusetts. We live in Massachusetts, and it was just really a providential. We met Bob and Judy at the Meadowhaven back. Well, there wasn't a Meadowhaven when we first met them, but they came into our lives about 95, I think.
Okay.
And by that time, we were a long time out, probably four, going on 5 years out. But we hadn't deconstructed a lot of the to understand what had actually happened to us. We were had moved away from the teachings, but we didn't understand the dynamics. How do we how do we understand ourselves putting up with this for so long, and how did that happen? And so Bob and Judy were really instrumental in helping us see the process.
And sort of exegete yourself.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and both of you. Yeah. Your wife.
By
not
that,
here.
She wasn't. She was surprised when I started coming out as a heretic.
Yeah.
But she was eventually. She came with me, hoping to win me back. But eventually, gradually, she began to see the light as well and walk away.
How about your kids? How did they process all this? That's a touchy question, I'm sure.
It's very everyone's different. They have different. They all had different experiences depending on their ages and what was going on in the family when they hit key age periods.
Right.
All of them, the lifestyle is not healthy for children. You have to call it abusive. I mean, some kids were seriously and heavily abused. Even for me, having been in the movement, it's shocking to me to hear some of the stories. But nobody got away with no abuse. Educationally, discipline, their exposure to sexual issues, all those that kind of stuff, was you couldn't be in the movement and not have those issues. So they're all over the map, but they're all a bunch of really interesting people. Love each other.
Adults.
Yeah, they're all grown. Yeah.
Are you still in touch with all of them?
Actually, eight of them live right in our, you know, within a 10-mile radius. One of them lives in Atlanta, and we have two daughters who've gone to be with the Lord.
Now, I found it interesting when you, very interesting when you told me yesterday, and you described it so well. You and your wife attend an Episcopal church.
Yep.
Tell me that again for the podcast here, sort of what the appeal there is.
I think it's, you know, the absolute opposite of a high demand group. There's a very, very low threshold for what you must do or believe, but it's still an opportunity to gather with folks who consider gathering around the Word of God and the table of the Lord on a weekly basis to connect with that essential story.
It's Christian to you.
It's definitely Christian. It's definitely. You know, the communion service is very meaningful. We had been raised Catholic, so we had some connection to the communion service. We practiced it in the family, too, for that matter. But just the discipline, there's not a lot of wild theories being thrown around. You know, you have a liturgy. You know what we're going to be praying every week. But it's
the liturgical approach is appealing.
It's kind of a safe place to park your thoughts. And there are moments in the service where I know it's just me and God. It doesn't matter where other people are at in the worship. But it's the liturgy has brought me to a certain place.
Yeah, interesting. Stephanie would say the same.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. She barely gets through a communion without tears. It's very meaningful for her.
That's something. Yeah. So one last question, Ray, that I think would be of interest to folks and is to me. You and your wife survived this as a couple.
Well,
to this point.
To this point. We just celebrated 45 years of marriage, and we said we'd take it one day at a time.
Yeah. And you're how old,
right? How old? I'll be 66 in a month.
Okay. All right.
So, in 3 weeks, actually.
Yeah. Happy birthday in advance.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, I consider it a privilege to know you, Ray. And
equally.
What are you doing now? I also think that's an interesting thing, your business now.
Yeah, we went to work for a company that produces some animated films for children on scripture and on historical figures, and been doing it for a long time. We love the product.
Yeah.
Enjoy meeting people from every imaginable Christian tradition. And
you do a lot of traveling.
A lot of traveling. That's getting a little old.
Yeah, I hear you.
But,
I hear you, especially when the flights are late out of Boston.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure to have you. I'm Neil Damgaard. This is Coffee Break, the podcast, www.neildamgaard.com. And I'm with Ray Connolly, a Massachusetts resident and representative for what company? Can't tell you that. He doesn't even remember, folks. But he is an author of a book. And he said, once again, tell us the book.
It's called Something Somebody Stole. It's a line from a Billy Joel song. And you can find it on Amazon, and it is dirt cheap.
Thanks for joining us, folks.
Bye.